Wow. Turn with me, if you would, to Deuteronomy 22. And as we do that, I'm going to try to operate the slides from this thing. Let's see if it's working. There it is. It is working. All right. One touch. I can't see it on here, but one touch goes forward. Two-finger touch goes backward. It's a free application. So, so plan on the high holidays. Again, please use. We go to a lot of effort, especially all the folks that that moving all the equipment and everything for this high holiday services. I got to turn off my phone, but I can't. I'm getting texts from Jessica just now. So. They did x-rays or something, now it's gone. But anyway, use this to invite your Jewish friends, invite those that don't know the Lord, that don't know the Messiah, don't know Yeshua, Lord, to the Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur services at these locations. And if you'd like to offer a special donation, make out to Kol Dodi and just put it on your earmark it on your check, or contact us if you want to give another way. I don't know how that works, but feel free to do that as well. If you want to donate, we will take some sort of an offering there, but just mention that there's boxes. That's all we'll really do. Pardon me?
The slide should say 2015, not 2014.
Okay, no, well, you... Okay, 2015. All right. Not 16 yet. And then, after the time of, you know, the theme of, I think it's Mitch Glazer's in his Fall Feast book, theme of the high holidays, repentance, Rosh Hashanah, redemption, Yom Kippur, and then rejoicing, Sukkot. We rejoice. We're going to build and decorate the sukkah on the 26th, that Shabbat, after service, and after grab lunch, come back and build. Maybe it'll already be there, but we'll be decorating. See Owen if you'd like to help with that. We're going to, I think, use a very, not the heavy one this year, but just some lighter ones, one or more. If you have one you want to bring, let him know, and that you want to leave here, you know, do here. And then we'll do it, the Kiddush in the Sukkah, the eve of Sukkot, that next night. And then Ushpizin. Yeah, thanks to, yes, let's give the Lord a hand. Praise the Lord. Thanks to AJ's amazing technical work, which we've done this. This is becoming our tradition each year. I think this will be the third year, right, that we're doing this? Third year showing that amazing film, and so pray for weather to cooperate, that the Lord will bless us with an outdoor and nice cool weather, bring a blanket, and we will have Marx Brothers film for the kids beforehand, so come early. I think it's the third, isn't it? Oh, the fourth time we're doing it. Oh, okay, fourth time, really? Wow, amazing. So, and we may even... If we do it late, we may do a double feature, but I don't want to keep AJ here longer than we need to. But we may do we have another Israeli film that's really amazing, that all the musicians will love, and anyone will love it. It's a very touching film, powerful Israeli film. I forget the name of it right now, but after that, but we'll see. So, Deuteronomy 22, that poor guy up there. Are you ready? All right. Hope this works. Yes. All right, so a scholarly teacher of the Bible came to town to do a series, and as he came to the town, he kept preaching the same message, the same sermon each night for three or four nights. So people started talking, saying, wait a minute, is this all he knows? He's preaching the same sermon every night. He must be a fake. Maybe he's a fake or something. And so they asked him, why are you preaching the same message? And he said, why should I burden you with another message when you have to do... yet to do the first one? And so I'm going to share some things that are maybe repeating some thoughts from last year, some of these thoughts that I'm sharing today. And in this case, it's true very likely for all of us, and I include myself, that we need to be reminded of these things. So Deuteronomy 22, but some of the things will be new, but you might remember if you were here last year during this parsha. Why do Jewish people often have such sensitized consciences? Look at Deuteronomy 22, not always, but oftentimes. It says, you are not to watch your brother's ox, in other words, you see it, or sheep, going astray and ignore them. And the Hebrew word is to hide yourself. It really is, which I'll show you in a moment. But he says, you three times it mentions this Hebrew word. It says, you see the going astray and you hide yourself. You ignore them. You must certainly bring them back to your brother. If your brother's brother is not near you, or if you don't know him, you don't even know who he is, then you should bring it into your house, and it will remain with you until your brother comes searching for it and you return it to him. You're to do the same with his donkey or his coat or anything lost by your brother that may be lost to him and you find. You may not ignore them. You can't just act like you don't see it. Let's put another one up there. Move. Okay, now it's not cooperating. Oops, that goes backwards. There we go. All right. Well, we'll stay there for a minute. All right. So he says, you must not watch your brother's donkey or ox fall down on the road and ignore it or hide yourself from it. You must certainly help him lift it up again. So, again, sensitize consciences. I think a lot of the Word of God is, you know, my dad was, though he was an agnostic, he was a professor, mathematics professor, then education professor, grew up in that, you know, environment in Philadelphia, taught at Temple University most of his life, almost all his life. But he always exemplified, even though he was an agnostic, and later told me maybe even an atheist, you know, but and I still have hopes that he did come to faith, but I can't be assured of that. I'll see when I get to the next place. But he always exemplified what it meant to have a conscience, to do what was right rather than what was wrong. If he received back, now we all use credit cards, not many of us use change anymore, you know, or cash, but if we received back too much change, or I said credit cards or debit cards, if we received back too much change from a cashier, he would go back to return it. He would let me, he would show me, he'd say, says, oh, he overpaid me, I'm going to go back and return it. And I never forgot that. If it meant telling the truth rather than a lie when it was not welcome to tell the truth, he bore the consequences. He would always do so. He fought. He was very active fighting in the civil rights movement, and during the '60s when I was still, you know, when I was in school. And I believe these values that Jewish people have come from the Bible being embedded in our history and our culture, even if they're still not held. If still not held by many Jewish people, many of us as Jews may not believe in the Bible as we would believe it here today, still the values are there. There are 74 of the 613 commandments in this week's Torah section. Warren Wiersbe said that we need to each ask ourselves this question: where would we be if others helped us to the same degree that we help others? Yeshua summed it up this way: so in all things, do to others what you want them to do to you. For this is the Torah and the prophets. Matthew 7:12. Ignoring or hiding yourself from another's plight is not, I repeat, is not an option before God. Martin Niemöller, I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, Niemöller, a Lutheran minister and early Nazi supporter who was later imprisoned for opposing Hitler, in other words, he changed his position. He said this, and maybe you've heard this quote before, it's a very powerful one. First they came for the socialist, and I did not speak out, because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me. This word here, hide yourself, alam. Oh, I had it back there. Let me go back. There it is. Oops. Back. Say alam. Let's say the word. Alam is the root. Again, I think there's irony in the word because you can hide. In other words, you can hide anywhere. The word for universe is olam, same root. Say olam. Like we say, Baruch HaTana, Hello, Eloheinu Melech HaOlam. God, you're the king of the universe. He's the king of the universe, king of the world. but really we mean by that the universe. And you can hide anywhere in the universe, you can try to, but you can't hide from the God who created you, who sees everything. I hide, so I think, but God sees. So I think there is intentional irony even in this word itself. Deuteronomy 22 says that if I find something someone's lost, I'm responsible to try to return it. Sorry, trying to get this thing to move. Sometimes it wants to move there. It takes a long time. All right, lost and found. There it is. So if I find something someone's lost, I'm responsible to try to return it, or I'm a thief. Not like the story of Berkowitz, who lost his wallet at the seniors' dance in Boca Raton, epicenter of Jewish community in South Florida. And he lost his wallet, so he stood up on a chair at the seniors' dance, and he said, excuse me, may I have everyone's attention? I lost my wallet with $800 in it, and I'll give $75 to the person who would finds it and returns it to me. And then a voice came from the back room, I'll give $100. It's not like that. We're not to avoid or overlook or pretend we don't know or see or look the other way or shut our eyes to another's plight. In other words, it's the difference between rationalization, we rationalize, versus doing the right thing. I am my brother's keeper, Genesis 4:9. That's the answer to that question. That's, by the way, on the Holocaust, one of the stones in the United States Holocaust Museum in Washington, which I was able to see, take my grandson to and daughter this week. Luke 10, if you'd turn there to Luke chapter 10. And we read here that story of what's oftentimes called the Good Samaritan. And so in verse, Yeshua is asked, what do I do to gain eternal life, by a Torah lawyer, in verse 25, and he tells them to love the Lord. You love the Lord with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind, and your neighbor as yourself. And then he's asked, well, who is my neighbor, in verse 29? But this man asks with a mode of wanting to vindicate himself. So Yeshua says, a certain man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho. He was attacked by robbers who stripped him and beat him. They left him, abandoning him as half dead. By chance, a Kohen, a priest, was going down that road. But when he saw the man, he passed by on the opposite side. Notice, he did see him. It's not that he didn't see him. He saw him, and he went to the other side of the road to avoid him. Likewise, a Levite. It was 2:30. He had a 3 o'clock appointment, and so he said, "I can't." Hey, that could be what happens, right? he said, "I got to make my appointment." Likewise, a Levite also, when he came to the place, he saw him. He passed by on the opposite side. But a Samaritan who was traveling came upon him, and when he noticed the man, he felt compassion. The Greek word, very long word in the Greek, means his insides. He was torn up. He saw him, and he couldn't just ignore him. He couldn't do any. His inside, he was just torn up by seeing this man in this condition. But and so what did he do? He did something about it. He went up to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on olive oil and wine. Then setting him on his own animal, he brought him to a lodge for travelers, and he took care of him. Next day, he took out 2 denarii, probably what would be maybe $200, $300, you know, a couple days' wages, depending on what you make. And he gave that money to him, but then he told the innkeeper, you take care of him, and whatever else you spend, I'll repay it myself. And Yeshua said, which of these three people, which of these three seems to you a neighbor to the one attacked by robbers? And the man and the lawyer answered, the one who showed mercy. This is a different word than the compassion. This is eleos. It's an easy one to pronounce in Greek. Eleos, and it means mercy, compassion. And Yeshua said to him, go, and you do the same. So we are responsible for what we witness, for what comes across our path. Current misfortune, sudden hardship, or oncoming difficulty, we're not permitted to be passive, but proactive. While visiting the National Holocaust Museum this week, I was struck with this illumination. While more and more giants are being recognized in recent years, called by Israel the righteous among the nations, those non-Jews who rescued the Jewish people during the Holocaust, now actually the total is 25,271 people. I'll repeat that, 25,271 recognized from 49 different countries. And it was just remarkable seeing that, you know, and showing them, and they all have amazing stories. And many are not mentioned at all because they did something sometimes, like in Belgium, I believe it was, or Denmark. They did it, Denmark, I believe, collectively. They worked together. But how many people, this is what hit me, I thought, how many people do we not know of who risked or gave their lives to save Jewish people? So many. And yet, God knows them all. God knows them all. And one day, we will very likely meet them and see them in their reward. Now, God sees what man may not see. Are you with me? God sees what man may not see. He's both omniscient. What does that mean? Omniscient? All-knowing, he knows. And omnipresent. What's that mean? He's everywhere present. Yeah. How many missionaries gave their lives to bring the good news and rescue people from eternal death that we don't know about, and spent their lives on a foreign soil and in terrible conditions, and we don't know about them, but we will one day because God sees it all. Isn't that amazing? It's going to be incredible. If we are to be concerned about others' lost possessions, how much more others' lost souls? Proverbs 24, these are sobering verses. Proverbs 24, 11 and 12. Rescue those who are being dragged off to death. Hold back those stumbling to the slaughter. If you say, look, we didn't know this, won't he who weighs hearts perceive it? Won't he who guards your soul know it? And won't he repay each one according to his deeds? Luke 12:2, Yeshua said, there is nothing covered up that will not be revealed, nothing hidden that will not be made known. Wow, that's a lot. Nothing. Ecclesiastes 12:14, God will bring every deed into judgment, including everything that is hidden, whether it is good or evil. It will come. It will happen. 1 Corinthians 4:5, just a piece of this, I'll quote, wait until the Lord comes. It says, judge nothing before the time when the Lord comes. It says, wait until the Lord comes. He will bring to light the hidden in darkness and also make clear the motives of the hearts. Then the praise for each one will come from God. Wow. So we don't see motives, but God does, right? And that's why when you're even the victim of injustice here, you know, I mean, I think we should fight for justice, and we do, you know, obviously, but sometimes when you just don't win and you can't do anything about it, give it to God anyway, and ultimately, know that ultimately there will be justice in the life to come. It will be seen. And where would we be again if others helped us to the same degree that we help others. We're responsible for what we can do to help another. Look at Deuteronomy 24 then, verses 19 through 22, that other passage we read. And where it says here, verses 19, says, when you reap, this is amazing, when you reap your field and have forgotten a sheaf in the field. Now, you forget the sheaf in the field. But the whole idea here is God is really superintending that. God allowed you for a reason to forget that sheaf in the field, that piece of wheat or those wheat, because it's not all about me. It's about others beside me. So he allowed that. He says, don't go back to get it. Don't turn back to get it. It's for the outsider, for the orphan, and for the widow. Names these three categories three times. In order that Adonai your God may bless you in all the work of your hands. When you beat your olive tree, you are not to search through the branches afterwards. It is for, so you're beating the olive tree, and you think, you know, a lot of the olives come down, but there's still olives up there, and you think, oh, I didn't get them all. God says, that's good. I don't want you to get them all. It's for others. You're not to search through the branches after. It's for the outsider. Here, let me put a better picture up there if it comes. Cooperate with me. Cooperate. There it is. Oh, now it comes. Now it's probably going to go. All right. So there, sheaves, olives, and grapes. He says, when you harvest your vineyard, you are not to pick over it afterwards. It is for the outsider, for the orphan and the widow. So again, the idea of your from the vines, not everything comes and leave it. He says, you are to remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt. Remember where you were. Remember what, therefore I'm commanding you to do this thing. Immigrants, let's say the word gar or ger. Ger is for a foreigner, someone who is actually, you know, the word the word would be, if I wrote it here, yeah, a resident alien, an immigrant, a foreigner. Then orphans, yatom, and almana, widows. Three categories that God says to remember. So today, the middle class is all but disappearing, it seems. It really does seem that's the way. The haves and the have-nots, go back to that, you know, the haves and the have-nots, in a Woody Allen film, a husband who has little income is frustrated when his wife remarks at how others have the latest luxury item. She says, everybody who's anybody has one. And he replies, yeah, but if you're somebody who's nobody, it's no fun being around anybody who's everybody. If you can remember that, good. I can't. But the whole point is, the Lord's saying, it's not just about you. It's about others. It's not just about you. It's a bigger universe. It's God's world. It's not your world. It's God's world. It's, you know, what you think is your universe is really God's larger universe. And so God is concerned about the poor and the disadvantaged, but he's also mindful of their need for maintaining dignity and self-respect. And so he established a system by which they could eat without having to beg for food. After the culmination of a season's hard work, the time of great pride in the harvest, following long hours of labor, God says to share my prosperity because it all comes from him. Land and produce are his gift to manage, not to own. And remember, I repeat again, I've said it before from Wormbrand, I got the thought, there's no word to have in Hebrew. We don't really own anything. There's no word. You say it another way when you want to say I have something, but there's no real word. Grain, the sheaves and the olives, the tree branches, the grapes, this is for the outsider, the orphan, and the widow, God said. And says, but if it was for anyone also who were in need. And by the way, it wasn't a handout. They had to work to gather the food items. Think about it. They couldn't just, it wasn't they just give it to him. They had to work to gather them also. Yeshua and his disciples gleaned in the harvest fields when they were hungry. We read in the Gospels, in Matthew 12 and Mark 2 and Luke 6, three of the Gospels record it. We are to bestow grace or favor. Hanan is the Hebrew word. That's the word down there. Let's say Hanan. Hanan is the root, and it means to give something for someone who can't get it themselves. And upon the poor. And three different words are used in Proverbs, the verses we read, the needy, the weak, the afflicted. And it's not, we're to bestow grace. Not, it doesn't say to, it's not for the lazy, those unwilling to work. The gifts I leave for the poor are actually offerings to Adonai. Hebrews 13:16, do not neglect doing good and sharing, for with such sacrifices God is well pleased. So don't be stingy, but God says be liberal. God says, and don't regret it. Don't strive or stress over lost income. Rest in God's providence and let it go. Be content. Be grateful to be able to give, to be able to be like God. Matthew 5:45, so that you may be children of your Father in heaven, he causes his sun to rise on the evil and on the good. And he sends rain, like the rain that got a lot of you wet this morning coming in, on the righteous and the unrighteous. So we're being like God when we give. Think about that. You know, Mother Teresa. But God gives three reasons to share, all right? Three reasons to share. Number one, because he will bless me. That's 24:19. Number two, because it's not mine. And number three, because I was once in the same position. I was once a slave. Remember, he says, you were a slave in need. Remember what it was like to be in need. You were once in a condition where you had it, and someone helped you. So three reasons. God says there's a reward. Yes, I will give you a reward. Number two, God says just do it. It's a requirement. And number three, because we remember what it was like. Or the other words I put out there for you to remember, God will bring compensation. Yes, he does. There are rewards. It is a motive. It is a God, you know, in the New Testament, we have four different crowns, you know, that are promised as rewards. And then not only, but it's a commandment. And then the greater motive, I would say, would be the third, compassion. Compassion. Because we're, and don't regret a good deed done. Don't regret personal loss for another's gain. I remember when I was a brand new, very, very new believer, and I went on a trip with some others in the car. I don't remember the whole context, but I'm going to tell you about Sam B. I won't give you his last name, but is another Jewish believer and had been in the Lord longer and is an amazing, amazing evangelist, amazing guy, teacher, just an amazing leader. And we needed money for something, and I didn't have enough money for some reason. I didn't bring, and I guess I should have brought, known to bring it, but I didn't for whatever. And so I all of a sudden was kind of attacked by another guy. I was harshly rebuked by another fellow, and I felt really small. And instantly, as that was happening, this fellow, Sam, interrupted, came to my defense, and he jumped into the conversation, and he said, God did provide. He provided through us. And he gave me what I needed. I'll never forget that. I'll never forget that small act of him standing up for me and coming to my defense as a young person and a young believer. You know, the little thing you do for someone, especially I think of young people, you know, it can have an impact the rest of their lives. Richard Wurmbrand tells this story, don't regret a good deed. I'm just going to, just part of it applies to this. A taxidermist, you'll have to think with this one, you ready? A taxidermist once caught a beautiful bird. When he lifted his knife to kill her, she pleaded, spare my life, I have little ones. In exchange, I'll give you three pieces of advice, very simple, but very useful. The man wondered at a bird that could speak human language and promised her freedom if the advice was good. So here's the advice, she said. She said, first, Never believe anything stupid, no matter who it is who speaks to you. Second, never regret a good thing you have done. Third, never reach for something unattainable. The taxidermist saw the wisdom of this advice, and he let the bird go. The bird flew to the first branch and from there mocked him. You fool! Why did you let me go? I have in my stomach a diamond. Had you cut me open, you would have been rich for the rest of your life. Upon hearing this, the man regretted having released her and began to climb the tree to retrieve her. But when he reached the first branch, she was already on the second. And when he was on the second, she was on the third. And suddenly he lost his footing and fell from the tree, breaking both his legs. As he lay groaning under the tree, the bird flew nearer and said, "You had accepted my three pieces of advice and praised them for being wise. Why did you not regard them for at least 5 minutes? I told you not to believe anything stupid, no matter who said it. Why did you believe that a bird had a diamond in her stomach? I told you never to regret a good deed. Why did you regret having freed me? I told you not to reach for the unattainable. Did you not know that you can't catch a bird with your bare hands?" Anyway, it's an interesting story. I heard him personally tell that at least once, maybe twice, in his speaking. If we are generous, God will deliver us in tough times. He promises us that in Psalm 41. We won't read it, but you can look at the first few verses of Psalm 41. He promises if we are caring and give out, he will deliver us in the tough times. He will bless us, and he will heal us when we're ill. When we're on our sickbed, he says he'll heal and restore us. Doesn't mean you don't get ill, but he restores you. He says, we will not lack, Proverbs 28:27 says, and that we will be watered. We'll be watered and rewarded because we've watered. Proverbs 11:25, 19:17, Proverbs 28:27, these verses we heard earlier. It will be given to you, Yeshua said, in like measure, Luke 6:38. Contentment is so important. We are to be satisfied with God's allotment to us. John the Immerser told the soldiers, "Be content with your wages. Be grateful. If I am discontent, if you're discontent, if you're unhappy and dissatisfied, your problem is not with your spouse or your marriage. Your problem is not with your employer or your job. I'm talking about you're always in this state where you're unhappy and discontent. Your problem is not with your location or your surroundings. My problem, I'll put it in the first line, my problem is not these things. My problem is me. It's with me. And my problem is with me because my problem is with God. God is in control of your livelihood. He saw to it that you forgot the sheaf in the field, that a number of the olives remained in the branches, that the grapes on the vine and the grapes on the vine. Why are you discontent? It's because if I'm discontent, I have a weak relationship with my Maker and Master. Hebrews 13:5 says, "Be content with what you have, for God Himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you." Be content because you've got me. Am I not enough? Am I not enough? And am I not going to provide you what you need, be having food and clothing? Be content, 1 Timothy 6:8. Be content. When my heart was embittered, the psalmist said, I was pierced in my heart. I was brutish and ignorant. I was like a beast before you. And then he says, whom have I in heaven? When he came out of it, he said, whom have I in heaven but you? On earth there is none I desire besides you, Psalm 73:25. He says, that's what, when I realized you are enough for me, I got over my bitterness. I wasn't bitter. You know, Paul is in prison, and I hadn't heard in a long time. I don't listen to Christian radio that much, to be honest. And I heard it was on, and it was, but it was really, it was good. Chuck Swindoll. And he was talking about how Paul was in prison, and he said there was no bitterness in him. He could have said, you know, look at how these people didn't come to help me, and I'm stuck here, and how miserable. Instead, he said, I've got an opportunity. I'm chained to this guard. I can share the gospel with him. What a great opportunity. He all, you know, and just had his attitude in both, I think it's 2 Timothy 1 and also 2 Timothy 4, when he's about to, nearing his death, and just his attitude. He was content with where God had him. Didn't mean he didn't tell him to pray, by the way, for I think he said to pray for my release, you know. It doesn't mean we're passive about it, but we reconcile to God. Paul said here in Philippians 4, he said, in every circumstance I've learned the secret of contentment, both to be filled and to go hungry, to have abundance and to suffer need. I can do all things, whatever it is, through Messiah who strengthens me. He's our life. That's the whole point. The problem is I want God to revolve around me rather than me revolve around God. I want him to serve me rather than, and that's the American gospel, by the way, as Dr. Michael Brown says, what can you do for me today? I think I heard him once. Listen, rather than what can I do to serve him? So if I'm not happy and I'm discontent all the time, I'm talking as a rule, that's the problem. Be thankful, start giving, and you'll find happiness. You'll start receiving. And the last portion in Deuteronomy 25, I'm just going to make a short reference to this, is to remember Amalek. And that deals with justice. We need to have an innate sense of justice, of right versus wrong. Everyone does. We can sear their conscience in 2 Timothy 4:2, but we are to remember Amalek. We know right and wrong. The guilty, wrongdoing, crime needs to be punished. The guilty need to be penalized and victims defended, the innocent vindicated. Our favorite series, I think my wife has, I know it's, I think my wife, our joint that we like both like, and I found out now, we turned my daughter Esther and Brian, their family in Baltimore to it, is Blue Bloods, Tom Selleck. And you know, it's amazing. It's great to have a wholesome drama that always, you know, with dealing with justice and there's family values in it. It's really a good series. I recommend it. Blue Bloods. God is a God of justice as well as mercy. He's both prosecutor and defense counsel. Deuteronomy 25 describes an obligatory war against a predatory tribe, a nomadic people inhabiting the Negev, who had perpetuated a cowardly, unprovoked attack on the faint, weary, in the rear of the column of the Israelites. They were exhausted from their march out of Egypt, and they showed no mercy to the weak. 400, 500 years later, after the prophet Samuel is given by God this precise order to kill to King Saul, the order which he disobeyed to get rid of Amalek, and for which God replaced him with David. Blot out the name of Amalek. It's our custom on Purim, right? What do? To blot out his name? We sound our, yes, we boo and sound our groggers, and yes, drowning out his name, murderous enemy of the Jews, descendant of Amalek. 54 times it occurs during the reading of the Megillah. So how does that apply today? I don't know. One rabbi feels that Iran, the regime of Iran, not the Iranian people, is the modern today's Amalek, and that's why a reason not to oppose this deal, the Iranian deal. And he says, we can never be lulled into believing that evil people and evil nations no longer exist. And he builds a good case for it and talks about, well, gives some things. But I'm not going to focus on that. Let's pray. Father, because my time's up, I want to close. We thank you, though, for justice that's